Civilization, where unknown forces strike the edge of ecology.
It's been a dramatic few days in France with the recent story, the Charlie Hebdo attack, which started on Wednesday, and the subsequent police pursuit of two gunmen, which led to some pretty dramatic climactic standoffs today, Friday, the 9th of January 2015. Now, I'm putting this episode out late in the evening of Friday the 9th, which is the day where we saw this thing kind of come to a head, really. Certainly the stage that we've seen, at least. I mean, there could be more to come, touch wood, there won't be. But I just wanted to maybe cover a few things about this story that certainly have raised the hairs on the back of my neck and got my attention, and things that perhaps the mainstream media, the MSM as they're now known as on various websites, which is quite a good abbreviation I think, haven't really covered, and they're important little snippets of information that have kind of got out there. And I'm not making any claims here, and I'm not coming to any conclusions. I'm not of the opinion that this was a false flag attack necessarily, but at the same time I wouldn't rule out anything. I think it's important to be open-minded, and it's important not to just absorb the stuff that you're spoon-fed by the MSM. You don't want to just take what they say on board without any questioning, without any research on your own. And some of the stuff that has been suggested is far out and it's wacky. Some other stuff perhaps is a little bit closer to what could potentially be an alternative to the official line, which may not be accurate. It may be a conspiracy, could be a false flag. So I'm just going to cover a few little things, really. I mean, the first thing I want to do is just very, very quickly whiz through the events, because at the moment it's fresh in my mind because I've been watching the news and been witnessing what's been going on. In a few months' time, people may forget. So in summary, on Wednesday this week, on the 7th of January 2015, it all started when two gunmen, who seemed very organised, pulled up outside the offices of the Charlie Hebdo comic in Paris, stormed it after forcing a woman at gunpoint to enter the key code into a door, and she was with her daughter. They didn't kill her. They basically just forced her to let them into the office. She obviously didn't have a choice. They stormed it with AK-47s and apparently an RPG, stormed into this office, read out the names of various journalists and the editor, and executed them. And they did it in a very cold, calculated fashion, very disciplined, like it was an operation, a military-style op. And they left the building. And apparently, I'm not entirely sure if the police officer threatened them with a weapon or raised his gun to them or ordered them to come to a stop, but they ended up killing a police officer, and the video was filmed by somebody in a flat nearby. I think they had quite a good vantage point filming it on, I think it must have been a mobile phone, but it's difficult to know for sure. I mean, the quality's pretty good. But they got some footage of the two guys engaging a police officer who was only armed with a pistol. He couldn't really have done much. They shot him, wounded him, and then they ran over to, one of them ran over to him and tapped him in the head with a single round and executed him. Now, I did watch that video, and I watched the unedited version, which is available on LiveLeak. So most of the stuff that you see on the TV, it's edited, so you get the pixelated version of that, or it cuts before you actually hear the shot. You never see anything. I did force myself to watch the unedited version. I've only seen it once. I just wanted to see it, and yeah, it's pretty nasty to see, because it's not gory, but it's just quite visceral, and it's you know that it's real, so it just has that certain shock value to it. But I had to see it. I just wanted to see it for my own sake, really. But there's a lot of debate about that video. I mean, one of the first things I guess it's worth mentioning is that some people are speculating that the video was faked, and that actually what you're seeing is some sort of doctored attempt at showing a police officer get assassinated. I think it's a load of nonsense, and I think anyone who's speculating saying that video is somehow non-authentic really needs to just kind of see some sense, and you know, you can't always say everything's a conspiracy. I mean, it certainly looks authentic from my perspective. And I mean, I'm no expert on firearms, but I know enough to kind of know, and many people who don't know about weaponry don't know this, but it usually all depends on ammunition, what you actually see when you shoot somebody. So for example, the general complaint that people have about that video, the general confusion, I think, is it's all down to the fact that you don't see any blood. So when the guy's shot in the head at pretty much point-blank range with an AK-47, which is it's a 7.62mm round, so it's a big round, people are expecting to see a head blow off, or they're expecting to see lots of blood, or a pool of blood. You just don't get it with the ammunition. I mean, there's two different types of ammunition, essentially. There's more, but I mean, there's two main types. You've got full metal jacket rounds, FMJ, which are hard-pointed rounds, and you've got what are known as jacketed hollow point, JHP, rounds. Now, the main difference between the two is that JHP rounds are designed, essentially, to inflict maximum damage to soft targets, and that basically means human beings or animals, unarmoured targets, and they basically expand on impact. So if a JHP round hits you in the head, it expands on impact and it comes out the back of your head, and it's about the size of a tennis ball, and that's when you see horrific wounds. Now, these guys, from that video, it looks like they were firing FMJ rounds, and FMJ rounds are full metal jacket rounds with a hard tip, which means that they are designed to penetrate armour, and it means that if you shoot somebody with it, it will usually pass through their body, in one side, out the other, and it doesn't cause an exit wound that's any larger than the bullet, because it hasn't expanded. So that looks... That's what it looked like. It looked like the guy was shot with an FMJ round that went through his head and bounced off the concrete behind him. That's why you see a ricochet, and you see some dust, and that's it. And if the guy had kept filming the body, perhaps you may have started to see a little bit of blood form. But it's a horrible thing to talk about. All I'm saying is that I don't think people should give much credence to the idea that that video was somehow doctored or faked. It's inane, really, as far as I'm concerned. But anyway, moving on from the video, I mean, one of the things perhaps about the Charlie Hebdo attack, which was the first day of this, that is worth mentioning, is that for some reason the French, I suppose it's not really surprising, but they haven't really admitted to this yet, but there's been, CNN, I think, have reported that they have a source who has told them that the brothers who apparently did this, Saeed and Sherif Kouachi, they actually fired an RPG when they were in the office, a rocket-propelled grenade, which mainstream media has confirmed they were carrying, or at some point they had it in their possession, or more than one. I think they just had the one. But, I mean, I don't know for sure, but I think an RPG is a fire-and-forget-style weapon. So, in other words, you fire it once and that's it, you're done. You can't reload it. I may be wrong about that, actually. I mean, there are so many different variants of RPGs, shoulder-mounted RPGs. I mean, in the video I've seen, it didn't look like they were carrying rockets. So it didn't look like they could have reloaded the RPG. I certainly didn't notice it when I saw the video of them running around Paris. But there is a rumour that they actually fired the RPG when they were in the offices, and I don't know if that explosion killed anyone, but it caused a lot of damage, and that's why the French authorities have been very, very cautious about revealing much in the way of photography about from within the Charlie Hebdo offices, because the theory being is that it's going to cause a panic if people realise that there actually could be a stock of RPGs at the hands of sort of militant cells in Paris, because RPGs are obviously a very devastating weapon. I mean, not obviously in AKs as well, but there's something particularly terrifying about the idea of guys running around with RPGs that could bring down helicopters, you know, a well-placed shot, or even aircraft. Certainly will destroy a bus or a train very easily. So it would have caused a lot of damage in the building if one was fired. So that's that. And then they drove off, and they get in the car very casually, they drive away. And then we're led to believe that they hijacked a vehicle during their escape. They got in a different car, hijacked another car, and got away. Several hours later, there were reports of a third gunman. And at first, people just assumed it was like a copycat event. The French authorities didn't admit to it, but now they've said it was linked, and the whole thing's all come together. Basically, another guy came out, AK, body armour, and he kills a policewoman in Paris and sort of disappears into the woodwork. Now, there was a whole periods where no one knew what was going to happen. Everyone sort of laid low for a bit. They were spotted in a forest. The police tracked them down to a woodland, couldn't find them. For whatever reason, they then broke cover, raided a petrol station, stole some food, and the two brothers ended up in a rather peculiar location, but perhaps they just didn't have a choice. They just knew that they had to make a stand somewhere, so they chose it. This warehouse, a printing warehouse, where one guy happened to be working, which kind of seems lucky, really. I mean, you would have thought the place would have been full. It was a working day, and it was during the afternoon, so you would have thought that there'd be more workmen there, but there was just one guy there, apparently, and they took him in as a hostage. And all the time that was going on, there was a third gunman in Paris who was... who took hostages in a Jewish hypermarket. Now, one odd thing about this story is there's reports that the third gunman had a female accomplice who the mainstream media describes her as the third gunman's girlfriend, but I think that was just pure speculation. I mean, who knows? But no one really knows. I mean, at the time of putting out this episode, it's still a mystery what's happened to this woman. So we know that the way this ended today was that the police raided the warehouse, killed the two brothers after a quite an intense gunfight, and then moments later they raided the restaurant and killed the third gunman. But no one knows for sure what happened to the woman. She may have escaped. She may have mingled out with the hostages and disappeared into the night, or she may have actually been killed in some of the explosions that went on. There were multiple explosions, and maybe they just haven't been able to identify the body yet. But no doubt, the more information will come to light in the next few days about what's happened to this woman, but it's just quite interesting that we still don't know, at the time of pinning out this episode, what's happened to her and what part she has to play in this, what role she has. I mean, we don't even know if she's armed. I mean, it could be that we may see some sort of attack from her in the morning, which it just sounds really bizarre that could happen, but might well happen. Now, obviously that's a very high level overview of what's happened, so now I can just sort of maybe just mention some details that I think are quite interesting, really. So the first one is, perhaps the most baffling part of this is the fact that the French authorities have said that the reason they were able to identify the two gunmen who attacked the Charlie Hebdo office on Wednesday, the reason they were able to identify them, because they were masked, they were wearing balaclavas in the videos that were revealed, was because one of them left their ID card in one of the hijacked vehicles that they abandoned. Now, it's just bizarre, isn't it? I mean, it reminds me of 9/11, where Mohammed Atta's passport, the infamous passport, was allegedly found in amongst the rubble of the Twin Towers in New York. And you just think, really? I mean, sometimes the truth really is stranger than fiction, and it's kind of like, well, that just seems like it couldn't happen. But perhaps these things do just happen. But it is just a little odd, isn't it? And it seems coincidental, and it just seems like a bad plot device in a movie, really. It's kind of like, oh, a very easy way of being able to place the blame on two particular people very, very quickly. And if you're to believe that this was a false flag, a kind of Operation Gladio style attack, then you could argue that this was designed to allow the authorities to place the blame on two patsies, essentially, and then allow their operatives, if you like, to disappear into the night. So the theory being that the guys who actually did the Charlie Hebdo attack were commandos, highly trained operatives, black ops, whatever you want to call them. And then these two brothers were then kind of wheeled out and used as patsies. I mean, that's just a theory. I mean, I'm not saying I believe that. I think there's too many holes in that theory, to be honest. I mean, I'll come to those in a minute. But it's interesting. And basically, the ID, the fact that they were found because of an ID left in the car is just bizarre. But I think they were probably free. They're free, basically, from what I've sort of thought about this and from what I can gather, there are three potential scenarios here. The first scenario is, these guys were well trained. It's as we're led to believe, two brothers, radicalized, trained by Al Qaeda, Yemeni cells, came back to France, wanted to avenge the Prophet Muhammad, and in a way that, you know, they felt that they were deeply offended by the cartoon, and I want to talk about that very briefly in a moment. And yeah, they just made a mistake. One of them made a catastrophic mistake and left their ID in the car. Scenario one. Scenario two, the whole thing was false flag op, and that was just designed as a nice convenient way of allowing the authorities to say, yep, we're pinning the blame on these two. Scenario number three, and I think, if I'm honest, I think this is possibly the scenario that I'm leaning towards. And this is that it was intentional. But on the part of the brothers, they wanted to leave a calling card, and the obvious way of doing that is to leave an ID card, because, I mean, why would they even bring their ID card with them? I mean, they may have been killed in a gunfight with the police outside the office, and then they've got an ID card on them. I mean, obviously they'd have been identified anyway, the body would have been, but why bring it? It just seems a little strange. But anyway, I suspect that it's possibly the case that one of them decided to leave it in the car as a calling card, because these guys wanted to be martyrs. They wanted to die as martyrs, and as a result of that, they decided that the best way to do that was to just say, look, hey, this is us, come find us, we'll be waiting. So there you go. So the comic itself, just briefly, I just want to touch on this very briefly. It's difficult, really. I had a conversation with my brother about this earlier, Peter, and I did consider doing a sort of joint one with Peter, but he's a bit busy at the moment, and I just wanted to get this out there tonight very quickly. But the thing about this is that we're all suddenly, everyone online, Twitter, all this stuff, that everyone's sort of saying we need to protect freedom of speech, and then there should be no limit to freedom of speech. Well, I'm sort of on the fence about this, if I'm honest. There has to be freedom of speech, no doubt about it. But at the same time, it could be argued that it was perhaps quite irresponsible of Charlie Hebdo in the first place to put out this particular cartoon. Now, I've seen the cartoon, and I don't really think it's particularly offensive, to be honest. it's just a guy, just looks like a guy with beards. That said, depiction of the Prophet Muhammad, there's nothing sort of particularly nasty about the depiction. I mean, it just looks like a guy with a beard and a sort of turban, and he just got a bit of a funny expression, that's all. I mean, certainly I've seen far worse. I mean, there was a recent Christian, there was a depiction of Jesus in a bath of urine, or just something horrific like that, just nasty stuff like that. But Christians aren't, it's not deeply offensive to a Christian to see Jesus in that way. I mean, obviously it's not ideal, but no one's going to sort of be too up in arms about it. I mean, people will be angry and upset. But this is a different level of rage that a Muslim feels if the Prophet Muhammad is depicted in any way, not even if it's an offensive way. I think, I mean, I might be wrong about that, but I think it's just in any way whatsoever, they cannot be depicted. Prophet Muhammad cannot be depicted. So Charlie Hebdo knew this, but I put this out there anyway. Maybe it was a little irresponsible of him to do that, knowing that it's so deeply offensive to a Muslim. I don't know. It's a grey area. I mean, I don't know what I believe, to be honest, when it comes to that. I don't really know if it's right or wrong. It's a very, very difficult one. But anyway, moving on from the comic. So the next sort of strange element to this story is during the series of car hijacks that these two brothers apparently performed, the French media managed to interview one of the guys whose car was stolen, and he was quite open about the fact that he felt the two brothers were very calm, very collected. He actually thought they were police. He described them as commandos. He thought they were just part of a sort of police unit, an elite unit that kind of needed to hijack his car very quickly. But apparently, according to him, they were very friendly. They didn't raise their voice, they weren't sweating. They were acting very disciplined, like they were on an operation. So that's just quite an interesting little perspective. And not necessarily reading too deeply into it, but I just think it's quite interesting that actually, you know what, these guys, some guy has actually identified them as commandos, or at least assumes they were commandos, I mean, or police, whatever you want to call them. And the point I'm making is that if you are to go down the road of saying this was a false flag, that's a detail that's worth remembering. An eyewitness has said, or a victim even, has said that these guys were, they seemed like they were professionals, basically. They seemed like they knew what they were doing. But maybe they're very well trained in Yemen. Maybe these guys really were given thoroughly good training by Al-Qaeda. And the West has perhaps underestimated it, the training that they receive. So, moving on from that then, we then had the sort of climatic battle today where there's different reports about what happened, but one that I think is quite interesting is that apparently these two brothers, when they were held up by the police, something triggered them to actually do a sort of Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid style attack. So that is, instead of just defending their position, they just decided to go out all guns blazing on the police, and they stormed out, ran outside of the warehouse, and there was a big gunfight. And they were both killed, if we accept that story. I don't think the authorities have revealed any pictures of bodies. I mean, I don't think that's a done thing anyway. I don't think they would do that. So I don't think it's worth reading too deep into anything like that. But we're led to believe that there was a gunfight. I mean, you hear it. I mean, I've heard it on the mainstream media. I was watching live when it played out, but the cameras were nowhere near the scenes. You couldn't really see anything. But the one rumour is that they managed to injure a couple of French special forces. So the French have GIGN, which are the sort of the equivalent of the SAS or the US Delta Force. According to some report I read, one GIGN operative was wounded. And the French have RAID, which is their equivalent of a SWAT team, and two of their guys were wounded in this conflict, in this battle. And so these guys didn't go down without a big fight, but then they were killed. Shortly before that happens, when they were actually in the office, in the warehouse, they actually were called, so the French media managed to find the phone number of this place. They dialed the number, spoke to one of them on the phone, and one of them happily answered the phone and told them live on TV that they were ready to go down fighting, and that they were funded by Al-Qaeda, trained, brought over by Al-Qaeda to avenge the Prophet Muhammad. I just find that quite interesting, and it's amazing, and they were very calm about it, very collected. And one Sky News journalist, Stephen, went as far as to say he was quite shocked at how much of a politician one of them, the guy, came over as when he was on the phone. Just very calm, collected, and just he had like a statement he wanted to make, and that was it, and it was exactly what you would expect from him. So again, if you're going to go down the false flag route, you could argue that that seems all a little bit too much like a nice coincidence, the idea that they could give a perfectly worded kind of admission of guilt before they then are killed. But look, these guys were hardcore and they were radicalised, and perhaps they did just genuinely believe that they were going to go down in a blaze of glory, and to them it was nothing to fear because they have these deep-seated beliefs in an afterlife and in what they perceive as martyrdom. So there you go. All in all then, I mean, like I said at the start of this, I'm not coming to any conclusions whatsoever. I'm not saying that it's a false flag, and I'm not saying that it's another example of problem, reaction, solution. But it could well be. That's all I'm saying. I just think it's important to have an open mind and not to just be spoon-fed what you're told by mainstream media. It's important to actually remember some oddities about this story, the chief one being the ID in the car. That's the main one, really. That's the one that really is fishy. But at the end of the day, they may have had intelligence assets on the ground that they're just not willing to admit to. This stuff that they possibly can't reveal. There's always elements like that in stories like this. They can't reveal their sources. They can't talk about their means and motives and all that stuff, because there has to be an element of secrecy behind their operations. But at the same time, qui bono, who benefits, as they say? Well, you could argue that, look, all this is going to mean for us as a society is that we're going to start seeing more security. We're going to start seeing police clamping down. Perhaps Paris is going to start seeing more armed police with itchy trigger fingers. And who does that benefit? Well, you could argue that that benefits the state, because they want to clamp down on things and they're worried that people are getting a little bit too angry, I think, a little bit too frustrated about the way things are going, austerity, lack of jobs, all this sort of thing. They want to clamp down. But that's just one perspective. I mean, you see, you could also argue that this whole thing is Al-Qaeda's wet dream, and really what they want is a clash of civilizations. And and I guess this is something that I kind of want to finish with. I mean, I have been noticing really in the last few days online there's a certain rage in the air, and you have to obviously weed out the trolls commenting on every blog and stuff, but in almost every single video I've seen, newspaper article I've read online, broadsheet, even sort of The Guardian, etc., you do get the sense that there's a real anger and resentment out there. And you've got two very distinct camps, essentially. You've got people who are using this as a vehicle to really hammer home the idea that multiculturalism in the West has failed, and that this is just a prime example of why we can never live in peace, and with multiple cultures trying to all amalgamate and live in one place. and that actually we need to accept that multiculturalism was a failed experiment, and that actually, you know, we need to start thinking about saying, if you have these deep-seated beliefs about Islam, then you're not welcome in our country. There's a real mood about that. But also you've got the other side of it, which is that you've got the sudden sense of them and us. You've got the fear that people are now kind of saying there's no such thing as a moderate Muslim, and you've got people saying all this stuff, and it's all very, very hot. It's all very heated, and it's potentially the kind of thing that could spark a clash of civilization. Really, it's the kind of thing that we could end up in a situation where it almost unfolds in a way that is perfect for ISIS and for Al-Qaeda, because they want to spread fear. But if you are to go back to conspiracy theories and accept the idea that Al-Qaeda and that is all the amalgamation of CIA projects from the Afghanistan wars in the 70s and 80s, it means the database, I think Robin Cook said, before he died in 2003. And it's just a list of names that the CIA used, assets they had, all this kind of thing. You end up in a situation where you start to kind of wonder if the whole thing's basically being used to spark conflict, and they're going to come out of the solution. You know, the whole big thing is PRS, problem reaction solution. So it's that actually what they're looking to do here is invoke more fury, more fear, and then as a result, that eventually one day, maybe not quite yet, but maybe if this unfolds, if this is like a Mumbai style attack, I'm in touch with it, won't be, but this may just be the beginning of what we're going to start seeing unfolding in 2015. By the end of the year, everyone could be so shell shocked that we're going to start accepting anything. We're going to want more and more security because we're worried that we're at risk. We're going to get killed. And I guess a good way to end this is to kind of paraphrase, I think, Thomas Jefferson. It's just the old saying. I mean, Alex Jones says it almost every time I hear his show, which is that essentially those who demand more and more security and give up freedom as a result of that security deserve neither security or freedom, and usually end up with tyranny. So let's just hope that regardless of your theory about what's happened in Paris, we don't end up with tyranny as a result of all of this.
The information where unknown forces strike the edge of ecology.